For centuries, Pacific Islanders have been sharing stories that connect us across the region. Stories from the Pacific is a weekly program that continues that tradition, bringing you deep and personal stories from a diverse range of people. Athletes, farmers, artists, teachers, activists, entrepreneurs, all united by their Pacific heritage and incredible journeys.
Listen to Stories from the Pacific on your favorite podcast app.
This is an ABC podcast.
Standing on the shores of Chuuk Lagoon, turquoise water stretches as far as the eye can see. And below the surface, it's alive with coral gardens.
So we see a lot of school of fish, like different kind of fish, huge. And we see a lot of turtles, a lot of sharks.
But amongst the beauty lies something darker that attracts tourists from all over the world.
But once you go down there with the wrecks, it's totally different world.
Wrecks from World War II. In 1944, American bombers turned this lagoon into a battlefield, sinking an entire Japanese fleet in a matter of days. Dozens of ships were bombed, torpedoed, and sent crashing to the ocean floor in just 2 days, an entire fleet frozen in time. The ghost of a war the Pacific never asked for.
We see bullet, different kind of bullet, size of bullet, and we see, we even see bones of like people, like skull and bones like that.
And inside the ships, the most dangerous relic of all.
There is like oil still in the engine, and there is some oil that's stuck under the ceiling of the ship. So whenever it's like a lot of people diving, then the oil kind of start to spill out. And when there is like typhoon stuff like that, then the oil start to spill out from the ceiling or the engine.
More than 60 wrecks sit in Chuuk's waters, with rusting tanks of fuel slowly breaking down. One has already started spilling into the lagoon, and it's a sign the whole underwater graveyard is starting to give way.
Every day we worry that once it's going to be spilled, imagine maybe 4, 5, 6, or 10 of them at once, then no more food for us from the water.
What World War II left behind has become a ticking time bomb under the lagoon.
It's going to be a disaster for our people. In our island, we just don't eat the fish. We also eat the cucumber, like a lot of things on the seafood. It's going to be very sad for our people.
Hi, I'm Scott Whitey, and this is Polytalk. Today, Pacific nations are still living with the wreckage of World War II. Wrecks packed with oil, corroding fast, threatening disaster, while global powers look the other way. Who is responsible for cleaning up this mess? And how much time does the Pacific really have left? For decades, the ship graveyard lay quietly beneath Chuuk Lagoon, breaking down, becoming part of the reefs, even turning into a world-famous dive attraction, a museum of history frozen under glassy blue water.
For Chuuk State, the shipwrecks are the biggest attraction for tourism here. I would say about 80 to 85% of our tourists that come here are mostly divers that really are geared into shipwreck diving.
Peter Atten is the Division Chief for Commerce and Industry with the Federated States of Micronesia government, and his office oversees historic preservation sites, including shipwrecks. Over the years, bit by bit, the wrecks have started to fall apart.
Climate change made the walls of the tanks or the oil tanks or fuel tanks thinner. So when the tourist ship came and they dove it with that many divers, the best way to describe it is like squeezing a ketchup bottle.
Then in 2007, the oil began to seep out.
One of the shipwrecks started to leak oil. Since then, other shipwrecks started leaking oil in small amounts. It's on the surface. When you go near it, you can smell it, can see it, the rainbow look on top of the water.
Fishermen started noticing a sheen on the water, and soon the oil was washing up on shore.
The farmers also reported damages to their crops.
These leaks were small, but were still doing damage. And Peter's office knew there were dozens of potential oil spills in the lagoon just waiting to happen.
Officially, we're recognizing 63 shipwrecks and planes that are in the lagoon. But in my office, we always say we have over 60. Why? Because just the past 2 years, we discovered two more shipwrecks and a plane that were never recorded.
And then the big one, the disaster everyone feared, finally happened. In September, the Rio de Janeiro Maru, an 8-deck Japanese ship, one of the largest wrecks in the lagoon, ruptured.
When that day happened, it was reported to us 3 days afterwards. And when we found out, any response, emergency response, we had to do it right there and there.
The shipwreck is only a few hundred meters offshore, and the oil soon coated the coastline.
Together with our Environment Protection Agency, we tried to contain the situation as much as possible. Unfortunately, the oil already reached land. The oil spill went all the way up to land, and we had to go out there and have it cleaned up.
The oil wiped out marine life and then pushed past the shoreline into food gardens.
Some of the taro patches, mostly on the western side of that island, were affected by it. We had to send out our medical team from our local hospital to do assessment because there were 3 reported cases of sickness, mostly due to the fumes.
It was a gut punch to the community, where people rely on what they catch and what they grow to survive.
Daily life over here is really through fishing. That is one of our biggest food source and also an income to the local fishermen. To describe the abundance of sea life over here, it's hard to describe it. There is something in the lagoon that a lot of people have complimented that our fish stock here in the lagoon is unique. It's different. So because of that, potential of oil leaks, a major oil leak to happen, will greatly affect that. Will greatly affect our fish stocks and what we have, our marine life here in the lagoon, and will affect our people, or their livelihood.
And for Peter, the feeling was overwhelming.
I would say, frustration of all the times that we've been trying to get assistance of the removing the oil from the shipwrecks, to worry, to heartbreak, to all kinds of mixed feelings. My other staff and my other colleagues in the other departments who have also been helping and trying to say the same thing, that this will happen. We all felt the same way.
The oil spill hit just days before the United Nations General Assembly. And on the world stage, FSM President Wesley Semenya stepped up to the microphone to plead for help. A plea that the nation had been making for decades, knowing this day would come.
Just days ago, I was compelled to declare a national state of emergency due to an ongoing oil leak from a World War II sunken vessel in Chuuk Lagoon. This ship, together with more than 60 other wartime wrecks, has rested in our waters for nearly 80 years since the war's end. But now, these remnants of conflict pose new dangers as toxic oil seeps into our ocean, threatening our fisheries, coastal communities, and livelihoods. The scale of this crisis far exceeds Micronesia's capacity to address alone.
Help has trickled in over the years in small, fragile lifelines, with most of the threatening wrecks being Japanese vessels. It was Japan that stepped forward first. In 2017, a Japanese NGO, Japan Mine Action Services, or JMS, arrived with a modest grant from Tokyo and a mission to slow the leaks before the worst happened.
They've been taking out whatever they could with whatever capable capability they have. It's not much, but at least it's something.
It's a small team with limited funding and light machinery, only able to pump just a few hundred liters of oil a day, a drop in the ocean that could be hiding millions. And when the Rio de Janeiro Maru ruptured, James did what they could, improvising in real time.
They were able to have a makeshift oil catchment, which they made it out of the 5-gallon water containers. They just cut open the bottom and anchor it down to where it's leaking out of, and they were able to capture whatever oil. Until today, they're still doing that.
The leak is still bleeding into the lagoon, and James is still diving, still swapping out their makeshift buckets.
So every 2 days, they dive down there and pick up and change those containers with another container and bring up to the surface whatever they were able, what they're able to capture.
But even this small lifeline can't slow time. The iron keeps thinning, the hulls keep weakening. Time is the real enemy.
Back in around 2003, by the end, the lifespan of those of these shipwrecks, they estimated at 50 years remaining. Now they're saying it's 5 to 10 years. Who knows? Maybe tomorrow or the next day, another shipwreck will leak major oil.
And for Peter, it's a burden he wishes he did not have to bear.
My islands and my people never asked for this. It was pretty much dumped upon us. It was never our problem. And we're trying to live with it and trying to deal with it as much as we can. Well, we just hope that there'll be assistance to get rid of this oil as soon as possible before it becomes a major problem.
But recently there's been hope after a team from Australia arrived, not to patch the leaks, but to understand the scale of the threat.
Recently, thanks to Dr. Matt Carter, who was with the Major Project Foundation in Australia, and his team, they were able to do our studies and assess the situation and all that, and came up with what needs to be done.
So I'm Dr. Matt Carter. I'm a marine archaeologist working for Inkfish. As a marine archaeologist, I've always been fascinated with shipwrecks and the history of them.
Back in 2018, Matt was watching the news and saw a story about an organization called the Major Projects Foundation that had bought a New Zealand diving vessel and was going to the Pacific to investigate World War II shipwrecks.
Essentially, Paul Adams, he was up diving in Micronesia, and this oil was coming up out of these shipwrecks. And he said to the divers, to the local, you know, dive business, you know, who's investigating this? Who's trying to help you? And they said, no one. And that's when he set up the foundation to actually start kind of investigating these wrecks. And I thought, wow, you know, that's an incredibly interesting kind of use, or I guess direction for this heritage and for this kind of training that I've done. It's really something I wanted to get behind.
In 2021, the FSM government reached out to the international community and asked for help understanding just how big the problem was. Australia answered the call and funded a study that Matt led. Although it's known that countries like the Federated States of Micronesia, Solomon Islands and Papua New Guinea are surrounded by World War II shipwrecks, no one has known just how much oil is down in the depths with them.
Across the Pacific, there's around 3,800 of these World War II shipwrecks, which are potentially polluting. Chook Lagoon in Micronesia is seen as ground zero for these shipwrecks.
There is an estimated 6 to 10 million gallons of oil in the Chook Lagoon alone, and the price of dealing with it is astronomical.
$5 to $10 million more than likely per shipwreck. What we face in the Pacific is huge, it's like setup costs. So to bring a vessel that's capable of doing the work in Micronesia and the Solomons, more than likely it's going to have to come from Singapore or from Hawaii. So, you know, just the sheer cost of getting a ship there for a start adds, you know, $1 million probably to every kind of initial response. So really quite challenging. And again, what we face in the Pacific is, you know, these countries don't have a lot of money to spend on most things. And when you start putting these kind of numbers in front of them, they're pretty terrifying when it comes down to it.
So Matt and the team had to rethink how the work is done and to make it cost effective.
And that was through more scientific diving, technical diving. So what we do is we go up in a team of at least five of us, and we use technical diving equipment, so specialist equipment, which allows us to stay underwater for longer. So we can stay underwater for about 3 hours at a time. We use underwater scooters, which pull us around. And then we mount cameras on them, so high-resolution cameras, and we work our way around the shipwreck taking tens of thousands of photographs. So the cameras are taking one photo a second, and then we can put that through some 3D modeling software, and it makes accurate, like centimeter, sub-centimeter accurate models of the shipwreck in that moment of time. So we can record exactly its condition and then compare that to historic plans of the ship, and we can see where areas of damage might line up with fuel tanks and say, okay, well, this torpedo hole has taken out two or three fuel tanks in this area, therefore there's no fuel left in them. So we can get a better understanding, a better estimate of how much fuel could still be in that shipwreck.
Over the years, they've taken this approach right across the Pacific.
I guess our big projects have been in Chook Lagoon and in the Solomon Islands, and also Bikini Atoll up in the Marshall Islands. And what we found is that every single shipwreck is different. So the way the ship was sunk, subsequent kind of if it's been salvaged afterwards or if it's been hit with ship's anchors, all these kind of things which kind of lead up to the condition of the ship today.
Across the region, Matt's team estimates there are thousands of these potential time bombs, and climate change is making it worse.
It is making things more challenging, like in the region. So things like sea level change, ocean acidification, warming temperatures, and the impacts of things like increased storms from climate change, that is going to have an impact on these shipwrecks.
And all of that, the rising seas, stronger storms, warmer waters, is speeding up a slow motion disaster. The steel is thinning, the hulls are weakening, and the clock on these wrecks is accelerating.
We also looked at satellite imagery, because you can detect oil spills from space, which is pretty incredible. And you could see which of the wrecks were actively leaking from the satellite. And then we also worked with a oil spill expert looking at kind of vulnerability of different ecosystems. Actually, on top of that, we also worked with a company who did oil spill modeling. So we could say, okay, we think this shipwreck has between this much and this much oil on it. If a release of 10,000 litres happened, where would that end up?
Matt and his team can dive, map, and model the danger, but they can't decide who pays for it or which wrecks get saved first.
It's a really challenging issue across so many different levels of politics, from, you know, kind of that diplomatic international through to the guys on the ground. So these shipwrecks, you know, they're leaking oil, they're pollution threats. They're also war graves to thousands of Japanese sailors. They're tourism assets for Chuuk. Divers from all around the world pay thousands of dollars to go and dive on these shipwrecks. So you've got all these different kind of competing interests. And at the political level, you've got, you know, Micronesia as a country has really strong relationships with the US and Japan as kind of major partners, major aid donors.
But at the end of the study, Matt presented his findings to all three governments. And the US and Japan has announced a joint statement to see how they can work together on the wrecks in Chuuk. But cooperation takes time. And time is the one thing these wrecks don't have. Every day the metal weakens, every storm rattles the hulls, every delay increases the odds of another spill.
It's incredibly urgent. Basically, it could happen any day. It might be today, it might be tomorrow, it might be 5 years, it might be 10 years. You just don't know. It's only a matter of time before they collapse. I mean, it's physics. It's going to happen.
Matt's work shows how dangerous these World War II wrecks have become. But in the Pacific, leaking ships aren't just a relic of the past. SPREP, The region's environmental body has spent decades sounding the alarm on the old wartime wrecks. Yet, at the same time, they're fighting a surge of modern-day spills from ferries, cargo ships, fishing vessels, and fuel barges that break down, run aground, or dump waste in the island waters.
Now, the Prime Minister of Solomon Islands says the environmental damage caused by oil that's leaked from a shipwrecked on an island in the country's south is extensive and mostly irreversible.
In 2019, more than 300 tons of heavy fuel poured into one of the Pacific's most pristine lagoons, destroying reefs, poisoning fish, and forcing villages into crisis after the bulk carrier Solomon Trader ran aground. A disaster that took months to clean and years to recover from. In Fiji, the scale is quieter but constant. Authorities say they've dealt with around 15 oil spills in the last 5 years. Fuel leaks from barges, fishing boats, and container ships, each one leaving slicks on shorelines, damaging mangroves, and threatening reefs people rely on for food. Off the coast of Upolu, Samoa, a New Zealand naval mission went badly wrong.
People in Tawhitoala village were some of the first working to save the crew of the Manawanui. It ran aground and sank just near their shore in Samoa. Now, some are too worried to fish because of all the oil putting their fish stocks and coral in danger.
The HMNZS Manawanui ploughed into a reef and sank, tearing open its hull and spilling diesel into one of Safata's richest fishing grounds. Villagers were banned from fishing for nearly 5 months. More than a year later, New Zealand paid more than $5 million in compensation, but offered no apology. The issue of shipwrecks is a dual crisis.
It's not only the World War II wrecks that we are talking about. We are talking generally like every other types of wrecks that we have an issue in the region.
Mohamed Zula, who goes by Zula, is SPREP's pollution advisor. Zula, Japan owns more than 80% of the wrecks, the US about 10%. Why has it been so difficult to secure proactive assistance from the governments responsible for these vessels, despite repeated requests from Pacific countries?
Maybe I can start with saying that, like, warships, they carry sovereign immunity. The cost of, like, intervention to remove oil are extremely high. There are some concerns where the states worry about appearing to accept the liability. But for many governments, these wrecks are simply far from, like, the modern policy priorities. There needs to be a multi-million dollar, I would say, a multi-donor trust fund established that could take care of, like, more than almost 4,000 wrecks in the region. But to clearly understand the scope of the risk that these wrecks actually bring to the individual countries, we need to, I guess, like, you know, do a little bit more investigation into the volume that we are looking at. The recent project that concluded in FSM, as funded by the Australian government, looked at those high-risk vessels in the Chuuk Lagoon. Have conducted, say, a very good assessment of all the wrecks, all the high-risk risk, and we have a very good baseline information. Now, taking those information and turning it into an action is something that we are working on right now with our partners and, of course, with the international community too.
SPREP isn't just dealing with 80-year-old shipwrecks. You're also responsible for spills from modern ships like fishing vessels, fuel tankers, cargo ships that are regulated under international maritime conventions. These are convention vessels. How does SPREP deal with convention vessel oil spills?
In the region we have is called PACPLAN. It's the Pacific Islands Regional Marine Spill Contingency Plan. So it's an arrangement within the region with metropolitan countries that provide support to their group of countries should there be a massive oil spill from convention vessels. So as part of our role under this PACPLAN, we are actively supporting all our members to develop contingency plan that I'd say minimizes damage to marine and coastal environment. And this PAC plan, it has been in operation for a while, and the intention of this regional arrangement is to promote and implement or strengthen coordination, regional coordination in planning and training of marine spills.
What's the big difference when it comes to dealing with World War II shipwrecks and oil spills compared with an oil spill from a modern vessel traveling into the Pacific?
The big difference of the convention vessels and the World War II wrecks, you have got the convention vessels that are covered under the insurances, whereas wrecks do not actually are not covered by any insurances. So if there is a spill from a convention vessels, there are of course avenues of claiming for the damages. However, when there's a spill from the wreck, there are no avenues to claim for any damages from its, I'd say from its flag country.
What lessons have SPREP learned from both the wrecks and modern day spills about this issue?
In case of wrecks itself, I think the important point is assessment for the impact itself on the environment, the establishment of a proper monitoring system, and with, of course, the engagement of the community that are likely impacted from that. At the end of the day, I think the most important or the most essential part is proper planning. So even when we look at wrecks, it doesn't really matter if a wreck sank 80 years ago or just a few, I'd say few months ago. The lessons apply across all vessels. And this, of course, gives us an opportunity to relook at our processes, strengthen our preparedness, response, training, and capacity to better prepare for any future spills in the region.
What is your message about this issue?
I think the most important message is that we need to better coordinate to act on this issue that we have in the region. The solution is quite clear what is needed. What we need is a regional coordinated response, of course, with shared funding responsibilities from our partners and donors. We do have, I would say, a priority list of high-risk vessels in the region. What we need is a dedicated technical expert teams, and of course, that could be only possible through a long-term commitment from flag states and development partners. The final thing I'd say is we need to move away from reacting to spills to preventing them. And that's the only way that I see that we can protect our Blue Pacific before any more wrecks start spilling oil into our pristine environment.
And so the clock is ticking. From a battle the Federated States of Micronesia never asked for, to the risk any oil spill poses to one of the most fragile ocean environments on Earth, these wrecks, war graves packed with oil, are breaking down faster than the region can respond. Communities who rely on the lagoon for food, income, and identity are living with a countdown they didn't create. Pacific nations have the data, the plans, the warning signs. What they don't have is the power or resources to clean up a war left in their waters or to stop the next rupture before it happens. As SPREP says, the only real answer is prevention. A coordinated, funded effort before another shipwreck collapses and the lagoon turns black. Polytalk is hosted by me, Scott Wyde. Our producer is Kuntamari Crofts. Our supervising producer is Jordan Fennell. And our executive producer is Faleanga Fulu, Inga Stunzner.